Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Never Left the Moon Williams.
I mean, I want to go to space, just not like this movie.
I don't think anybody is supposed to go to space like this movie. We have a great show in stores. We're going to be talking about the recently released film in theaters, and that is Moonfall. But we couldn't talk about a ridiculous movie without bringing on a ridiculous extra host, and that is our part-time intern, part-time stenographer, part-time everything. Yeah, you're just part-time, Amy.
Part-time, indeed. I am. Not a part-time astronaut, though. Sorry.
We all got a chance to see this movie over the past weekend, and we got a lot of thoughts and comments, and We have opinions.
Yeah. Mm.
So stick around as we dive into that and get a little deeper into that conversation. But before we do, Spencer, why don't you give them opening credits?
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. You can check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com, where we have over 300 episodes ready for you to listen to. We have everything from anime to romance to comedy to action. We have it all. Check us out, filmlosophers.com. Also check us out on the socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on our Instagram and Twitter at filmlosophy101. Also check us out on any streaming podcast app. App podcast streaming app.
Platform?
Either or, whatever. You know what? Audio Boom, iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, anywhere where you can find podcasts, we are there. So check us out, subscribe to us, let us know what you think, drop us a review. We'd love to hear your thoughts. That's actually how we got the idea for today's episode. Oddly enough, so from a reviewer comment who mentioned that they wanted us to review this movie.
Thanks, Raphael. This is your fault.
Big shout out to you, Raphael. We appreciate your listening, and be prepared to hear some thoughts because this movie really kind of It took us to the moon. So
not in a good way.
Not in a good way. But of course, we are expanding our show every day and every opportunity we can. We are highlighting great parts of this podcast outside of just the main show. And again, today we are graced with another awesome presentation of Spencer's new segment, Spencer's Big Score. So Spencer, why don't you take it away for us, buddy?
The subtitle to this section is Spencer Tries Not to Talk About Hans Zimmer. That's what I was planning.
He tries not to.
Yeah, I picked four. Four.
Does that mean also no Junkie XL too? Because Junkie XL is essentially Hans Zimmer's protege.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean,
That's a hard goal to set. That's like you set one step ahead and like, okay, I'm gonna take it one step at a time. You're like, okay, I'm gonna jump the Empire State Building, and then I'm gonna. Hans Zimmer has done so much, but go ahead.
He's done too much.
He's done too much.
Like it's he's great, but like I gotta add in other people. Other people have done stuff.
Yeah, true. It's like you look at Hans Zimmer, and Hans Zimmer is essentially the man who has created music for every mood. You want a somber mood, you put on the Gladiator soundtrack. You want a more like anticipation, like kind of built up anxiety kind of thing, listen to Dunkirk. You want a more introspective one, listen to Interstellars. Like there's literally one for every mood.
You're being attacked by aliens, play the gong from Inception.
Inception. The one that started it all. That's actually that, whoa, that whole sound.
And I'm just going Pirates of the Caribbean with my chorale person that I really, really like. He did some of those. And then for me, The Holiday, which was my ringtone for a lot of time, which was Gumption. It made me happy. Where Jack Black played Hans Zimmer. Anyway, okay, tell me about music.
He didn't play Hans Zimmer, but he
played a version of Hans Zimmer. We'll talk about that off air. I do not want to sideline your amazing
you
segment.
You are. So go ahead, Spence.
Go.
All right. So today I want to talk about The Last Black Man in San Francisco. That movie was amazing. And one of the things that made it so amazing is just the soundtrack that was done by Emil Mosseri. He's done some, like, after the fact, he's done, like, Minari from mm-hmm. A24 as well. Yeah. So he's been in a few other things, but his soundtrack for... I don't use this word often, but it's exquisite. Mm. Really kind of fits here. Yeah. Even though that sounds super pretentious. But it really does fit. Because, like
well, just, if you've seen the movie, then you would know how well... I mean, this is outside of the question of, you know, oh, it's exquisite. Oh, that's pretentious. You see the movie? He was right.
So, so the first track that's been playing over us has been the San Francisco song... where there's flowers in your hair, and it's the instrumental version of that. I like that they just included two different versions of the same song. I really like different takes on the same song, and this soundtrack actually has that because they also put in demos for other versions of the songs, and some of them I don't like.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's great you made different choices than like. You're a smart person, you know what you're doing, but like being able to hear some of the other ideas, like some of them I'm like, okay, I can kind of hear the melody, and then and others I'm like, nah, you made the right choice. Okay, so in this second track, this is going to be King Jamie's, not the suite, the theme, because there's two.
I was like, wait, the suite?
Very similar named ones, and it kind of is one of the songs I think about, like, it's a real walk around town type song, because like, this is true for a lot of the soundtrack, but like I can just kind of walk around like areas and just have it playing in the background, and it kind of just puts you in a peaceful place.
Yeah,
and
it's a vibe. I mean, without a doubt, it's a vibe.
Like this one and also Mon's theme are like real vibes for me, and I just love it because I feel like it's beautiful. And the last one I want to talk about is not something I was expecting to find on the soundtrack, but it's backstory. Because this soundtrack had a backstory of how Jimmy met Mont, and I was not expecting...
I'm sorry, what?
I know, that was not something I was expecting to find on the soundtrack.
Hey.
And so there is an 8-minute story of like how like the first time they met at school.
Uh-huh.
And it was a sweet short story. And I'm like, and I'm like, there's no place to really put this in the movie.
Yeah.
But it was a good story, and I'm kind of glad that it fell into the soundtrack.
I feel like this should have like maybe preceded the film right before it started and then got into it or something, maybe.
It wouldn't have fit, I don't think.
I don't think it would have. Because like I kind of like the film the way it is, where it starts off with him just working.
Yep.
Because, like, in that short story, you do learn that, like, he's homeless. And so, like, just, like, the flip from, like, oh, you're homeless to, oh, you have a house. Plus, it also explains why he's living with Mont. And, like, it does, like, a lot of fill-in. And, like, even though, like, it's nice to know that now, like, the movie still works without it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so that's all I wanted to talk about today. Real short and sweet.
Well, there you go. That is Spencer's big score for this week. Of course, if you want to check out more, we're going to be putting up clips of Spencer's big score on our Instagram page. So head over there whenever you get a chance. But that brings us to our main topic of tonight's show. And ladies and gentlemen, strap in, because we are going to be talking about 2022's Moonfall. So unless you haven't really heard, I mean, honestly... I didn't really know much about it at the time. I didn't really know it was even a movie coming out recently. But on top of it, I don't even know the production studio. Like Hawaii? Hawaii?
There was a lot of things at the front where I'm like, I've heard of none of this. Is this like brand new?
Full disclosure, I had looked up a bootleg version of this film to see like, all right, well, I don't know if I, but then I felt bad, but I watched a couple of seconds at the beginning. There was Mandarin and everything on it and winning slots or whatever. I went in to see the movie in the beginning. I'm like, this looks just like the bootleg.
Yeah.
Like it's like, and then on top of it, there's like that name that comes up. I'm like, what the heck is this? So... Needless to say, we are going to be talking about Moonfall. And before we dive into it, Spencer, why don't you give them the official synopsis goodness?
A mysterious force knocks the moon from its orbit around the Earth and sends it hurtling on a collision course with life as we know it. With mere weeks before impact, the world on the brink of annihilation, NASA executive and former astronaut Joe Fowler is convinced she has the key to saving us all. But only one astronaut from her past, Brian Harper, and a conspiracy theorist, K.C. Houseman, believe her. These unlikely heroes will mount an impossible last-ditch mission into space, leaving behind everyone they love, only to find that they just might have prepared for the wrong mission.
All right, co-written, directed, and produced by Roland Emmerich, the film stars Halle Berry, Patrick Wilson, John Bradley, Michael Peña, Charlie Plummer, Kelly Yu, and Donald Sutherland for 2 minutes. A couple pieces of news about this film. Josh Gad was actually originally cast as Casey Houseman, but he dropped out of the film due to scheduling conflicts.
So then some executive was like, get me the closest Josh Gad impersonator you can find.
We this only have an English one.
You mean a delightful English
one? Yeah, better than...
this is the one thing I can attest, because both of you had to sit through that Olaf's Great Christmas Adventure You wouldn't have made it.
I had to sit through it.
I know. I said, y'all wouldn't have made it. If he had been the other character in this, you'd be like, nope.
Yeah, but like the first time he showed up in the film, I'm like, why do I get Josh Gad's vibes from this guy? It was weird.
Yeah, I honestly...
That's weird now.
Yeah, I honestly feel like Josh Gad wouldn't have done to the level of what the work John Bradley did for that character.
Plus, Josh Gad, super likable.
He is. Yeah. And
he's personable.
No offense to Josh Gad. Josh Gad does well in his own in his own right, but I don't think he would have hit a lot of the connecting points that I had with John Bradley's character in this if it was Josh Gad.
Yeah.
So, and we'll talk about those a little bit later. During the flight chase inside of the moon, Casey mentions ludicrous mode, assumedly in reference to the Tesla car mode of the same name due to the amount of times he references Elon Musk throughout the movie. However, the term ludicrous mode is not a Tesla invention, but rather a direct reference to Spaceballs, in which the same term was used by Dark Helmet's spaceship, fastest mode of transportation.
Put it in ludicrous
mode. So those were little fun little tidbits about the movie. There's not a lot of information quite yet out there about the movie or behind the scenes, just because I don't know how quickly production went or how much promotion there was about the production. So that kind of gives you an idea of how the movie will proceed or how a review will proceed. But first thing I did want to mention, so recognizing that this movie was co-written, directed, and produced by the Roland Emmerich, if you are not familiar with Roland Emmerich...
Mostly like I wasn't for a very, 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 very long time.
You either have been living under a rock or...
You're me.
You're Amy. So just to give you an idea, Roland Emmerich has done... movies such as Universal Soldier, Stargate. Independence Day,
Godzilla.
He directed Godzilla. The Day After Tomorrow, 10,000 BC, okay. 2012, White House Down, the new Independence Day movie, Midway.
Anonymous.
But that has nothing to do with...
Yes, I know.
Oh my
God. The best part.
That has nothing to do with what we're like, talking what? About.
I know. The Day After Tomorrow I did like.
So, yeah, he's done a bunch of destructive movies, and honestly, he's becoming a little bit of a Michael Bay, in a sense.
Becoming? Did you not see Independence Day Resurrection?
Well, no, okay, that was bad, but the thing is that Michael Bay is a grody perv. Like, that's the difference between him and Michael Bay. I will still give Roland Emmerich the effort of, like, okay, he's trying something new. This time the world's going to be destroyed by the sun or something. Like, I feel like that's fine. That's expected. But if he's like, the world's going to be destroyed by the sun and the only person who can do it is this over-sexualized 13-year-old that we're going to put in this movie that we're going to recognize and call her little J-Lo or something. That's literally what happened in one of the Transformers movies.
Not Bumblebee.
I said Transformers.
Yeah, Bumblebee's pure.
So.
I saw, and speaking of Transformers, I saw a poster for your childhood sadness. Oh. The poster looked great, but I was just like, uh-oh.
Oh, I I'm so concerned. This is what my year is now, being concerned about this Beast Wars movie.
True. It's coming out, and yeah. So first thing I want to do is kind of talk about what are your guys' experience in terms of with Roland Emmerich's previous films. You know, are you a fan of them? Do you like some of them? Do you not like them? Do you think he got better with age? Do you think he got in terms of his movies, or do you think he's kind of losing it?
I'll top in and say losing it. Like, I grew up with, like, Independence Day, you know, and The Day After Tomorrow. Loved those movies. They were great. I thought, you know, Day After Tomorrow, little bit on the ludicrous side, probably, with some of the weather patterns, but I was like, all right. Then, you know, 2012, like, again, a man drove a limo through a crashing down building. I was like, this is crazy, but I'm still in for this movie. And that's kind of how it's been going. He's been, like, ratcheting it up, and then right when we get to Independence Day Resurgence, that's where I'm like, nah, I'm not on board for this anymore, because this is not good at all.
They
killed off Will Smith.
In the most, like, inconsiderate way.
Yeah.
Like, oh, he died test piloting one of the new ships. And that's it. That's literally all they say. Like, there's no homage, or there's no honoring the previous hero of your film just because he says he wasn't wanting to do the next one. I don't know. That seemed a little bit like of a jab in the side or something.
You mean petty?
Same thing. Speaking of petty, Amy, why don't you go ahead and explain to us what is your experience with Roland Emmerich films?
Well, I think I already established I really liked Anonymous, but it has nothing to do with disaster movies, so that was a delight. But prior to that, I had been around all the hype of everything else.
That's right. You just recently saw Independence Day.
And Day After Tomorrow. That was May Day. That was the May Day movies from last year.
Oh, that's right. That's
and Geostorm, right. And I got him confused, and I checked with Spencer before the, like, before the show. I was like, wait. The one in the library, right? And I'm like, I like the library one. So Independence Day, I had always caught snips of it. So I kind of knew the premise. I was like, okay. And then, of course, the speech, because everybody plays that speech for you at least once or twice.
It's a good speech.
It's a very good speech.
It's like one of the most impactful speeches in cinema.
Yeah, I think it's a bar, really.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. And then Godzilla, I had the toys.
Oh my god.
They came in my Happy Meal, man. They came in my Happy Meal. Okay. Anyway, so having fresh eyes on him, I was able to see a lot more parallels between his Master of Disaster older movies and this. But yeah, I think I really like The Day After Tomorrow because it wasn't like completely, it was convoluted, but there was a library. There was a library.
Your reasons for liking movies are very astounding.
You don't like almost anything that I like.
You literally said you like The Day After Tomorrow because there's a library.
They literally go into the New York Library. It is the largest library in the United States, not including the Library of Congress, because technically it's not in the United States. And they hang out in a room and they're trying to survive so Dennis Quaid can come save them. Like, come on. If there's someplace I would like to hang out and possibly, you know, meet my demise, if I'm going to be frozen by a superstorm, a library sounds nice.
Okay. Well, I mean, obviously, in terms of my experience, I've seen most of his films. I remember one of the first films I saw from him was Universal Soldier. Everybody's seen, most people have seen, I'm looking around the table, most people have seen Universal Soldier.
Half the time it's not me.
Jean-Claude Van Damme, Dolph Lundgren, great movie. Stargate was another one of those, Kurt Russell. And then you got into his, like, pretty much crown jewel, which is Independence Day. Mm-hmm. Independence Day really kind of set the stage for, and we've talked about it at length. Look on our episode on May Day for last year. I forget the episode number, but I think Amy's looking it up. Yep. We talked about it then, but it's a great movie, really kind of set the bar for alien movies at that time. And then after that, I'm not going to lie, I have a guilty pleasure in actually somewhat kind of liking Godzilla, mostly because of the fact that it's just so ridiculous and kooky. you have Matthew Broderick and you have, what's her name? I forget the girl's name.
Matthew Broderick.
No, Sarah Jessica Parker.
And a kaiju.
Well, Sarah Jessica Parker, Matthew Broderick, Jean Reno, Hank Azaria. I mean, you had a lot of really funny people in this movie. And yeah, I mean, you can't. Oh, no, it's. I'm sorry, not Sarah Jessica Parker. What am I talking about?
Isn't this the movie where he made fun of what's his name? Roger Ebert.
Oh, so Independence Day is
Maria Petillo. Yeah.
223. It's old fashioned blockbusters, but it was from 2020.
There we go.
Yeah, this is.
Yeah, they make fun of him. Nancy Cartwright, who everybody knows. This was just a fun movie about ridiculous. It has nothing to do with Godzilla. This movie is not about Godzilla. It's about a pet lizard loose in the middle of Manhattan.
Lizard.
And mind you, the subsequent cartoon series that followed was actually pretty fun. If you had gone to Discovery Zone shortly thereafter, they had the Godzilla kind of, I guess at the time, UPN and or WB at the time, and them kind of had a promotion because they had like the Men in Black laser tag, and they had the Godzilla little part of it too.
I don't remember that on my Discovery Zone.
Oh yeah,
we didn't have a cool Discovery Zone, man.
and then obviously I found a new love in The Day After Tomorrow. The Day After Tomorrow is really great. Everything else after that, I didn't really enjoy all that much. Like 2012, it was kind of bombastic. It was kind of ridiculous. John Cusack, Woody Harrelson's in it. You have a lot of different folks in the movie. It really hit bad, and I figured that he was either struggling or just in a big funk, because Independence Day Resurgence was horrible. It was just bad.
Okay, so I originally thought 2012, he was like at the last minute, he heard about the whole Mayan thing. He's like, I gotta get a cash grab in for this, and that's why that movie was a mess. Independence Day Resurgence, I have no idea what happened there.
I no, that's what I'm saying. Like 2012 has elements of like, okay, this is unique. This is what everybody's talking about. You're doing something kind of on the nose. It's a little ridiculous, and it's a little like, it's probably going to cause more panic than good. But it was a disaster movie.
Yeah.
Independence Day Resurgence was just like, I'm thinking the studio was like, Roland, we need to get a sequel in now. Because what is that? That's 2016.
And it was just that speech from The Matrix Resurrections that where the studio's going to do it with or without. That's, I feel like that's going to be a thing that we carry forward about that fourth Matrix.
All our movies are going to hit that mark where the studio's like, you either do it or we're giving it to someone else. Like, it's probably in that vein right now.
I wish they would do that to Michael Bay in Transformers.
The problem is Michael Bay won't stop making ridiculous movies.
I know, but people, they go, this isn't for you. Okay, buddy, you're cut off. You know, no.
He's like,
no,
the kid is like, it's mine! It's mine! And he's taking them back.
Oh.
So long story to say, I've had most good experiences with Roland Emmerich. It's his most recent movies that I'm kind of concerned about the direction of his ability. Because, yes, mind you, Michael Bay lost it after Bad Boys. Like, after Bad Boys, and then he did Armageddon. Armageddon was okay. Armageddon, I mean, if you've...
I'm not getting it on.
I like
Armageddon. I know you guys do, and it is now the butt of so many jokes, and I get to see it everywhere I go. And I'm glad that I experienced that once.
And not just that, now you get to understand a lot of the inside jokes and all that with the director as well.
Well, and now I'm just like, never again. I'm gonna have my Titanic moment and go never again. I'm tossing this jewel of the ocean back into the sea. Let it be claimed by time.
Because you look at Michael Bay. Michael Bay did, like I said, Bad Boys. He did The Rock. The Rock was great.
Okay.
Yeah, he did. Obviously, like I said, Armageddon. He did Pearl Harbor. That was actually pretty accurate. And then you got the first Transformers. That's when everything started going downhill.
Wasn't that with Sam McQuickie?
Yeah.
I just like his last name. That was the best part of the movie for me.
And
Peter. His voice was very nice.
So anyway, we got a lot of like...
This is normal for me. Keep going.
Literally from Bad Boys 2, which was in 2003. The Island, which was a good movie. Mm-hmm. It was very interesting. Amy, I know you haven't seen that one.
Of course. But I saw Bad Boys 2, weirdly enough.
Yeah,
keep going.
Something you want to swap on.
Yeah.
Exactly. I liked the first one. I took a chance.
Because like The Island, you got Ewan McGregor, you got Scarlett Johansson, you got like essentially life model decoys.
Oh, wait, I have seen that one. Where they're the clones.
Yeah.
Yay, I did see that one.
But then after that, you got all these movies that subsequently follow that are like Transformers movies. So everything from 2005 until recent have all been Transformers movies. We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Out of 9 movies, 1, 2, 3, 4 of them are not Transformers movies.
And those 4 are?
You got Pain and Gain with The Rock, 13 Hours with John Krasinski, 6 Underground, and then Ambulance, the one that's coming out this year. And he has another one coming out called Robopocalypse.
Didn't 13 Hours do really well, though?
It's based on a true story. It came out in 2016, the height of like Trump make America great, kind of like the height of Americana kind of thing.
Djangoism, not patriotism. Keep going.
I don't know. So Michael Bay, he's been having an issue for a while, but like Roland Emmerich is kind of in that peak. This is kind of like the before The Last Airbender for M. Night Shyamalan.
Ew.
So you have to hope that Roland Emmerich's next movie does not go that far, which looking at his IMDb page, the next thing that he's making is a remake of Stargate.
Oh, so I was excited for this.
Hey,
I don't
dream a little dream, buddy. Maybe it's a good one.
James Woods.
Why'd you say James Woods?
Wait, that. What?
James A. Wood.
I don't know who that is. No, when you said James Wood, I was like, wait, remember, what?
For him, it's James Wood.
Okay.
No S. This is James Woods. So
he's plural.
So back to the movie that we're talking about for tonight. We went and saw the film. I went to go see it in theaters. Amy, did you go see it in theaters?
I did at a very late night showing that had some ridiculous shenanigans going on, but safe shenanigans nonetheless.
What about you, Spence? Where did you?
I actually went to see it in the theater because I thought.
Oh my God! It's 2-2-2-2-2. That's why Spencer went.
It's our miracle. It's our miracle day.
It's our miracle episode.
Well, so Cinemark had 3 showings that day, and I was like, "This seems like it might not be popular enough that people are in there." So I went, and like there was like 2 groups of people. I was like, "All right, I can deal with this."
Nice. I had kind of the same thing. There was me, a couple in the back, and a guy that had snuck in because he didn't pay for his ticket. And there's some history with that couple because they didn't make it through the movie.
So after you guys saw the film, let's talk about first impressions. First impressions on the movie as soon as you came into the theater. Spencer, go.
Acceptable.
That's my first
That's brilliant. It's so delightful.
There you go. I can't even. I can't even with that. Okay.
It's like the most accurate.
That's.
Is that yours too?
No. I go Amy. Just okay, take it.
But I like that one.
That was a good one.
Yay, Fuzz Aldrin.
Oh yeah.
I have to pee. It was in that order. I'm like, yay, the cat. Okay, now I'm leaving.
He did have a really good name for his cat.
Whoever named the cat was the money.
Yeah, the second I heard that, I was like, brilliant. I don't even like cats that much. And I was like, that's a brilliant name for
you. What about you, Eddie? You were not rolling in the aisles with laughter.
I was more confused at the end. How can you leave me with a 2-hour film and still leave me confused? This movie, it's not difficult to understand. The confusion part was, why was this so long? Why did this movie need to be made? And why does Peter Wilson always play the same person in every role that he's in? He always plays the cocky jerk who is unlikable until he does something that changes your opinion. And you still think he's a cocky jerk, but you can watch him maybe for a few more seconds.
Oh, is that the guy that was like the main protagonist, Henry, whatever his face was? I don't know.
What are you talking about?
I don't know the person you're talking about. I don't know who they are.
Oh, Peter Wilson. That's Brian.
So he's the main guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know him by face alone, and I usually go hard left.
So like
I'm turning back.
Oh, I'm sorry, Patrick Wilson, not Peter Wilson.
Sorry, Peter. See, wherever you are.
Sorry, Peter. But the reason why I say like, so he was like, he was in what was he in? He was in. Insidious. He was in Insidious as the dad.
Didn't see it.
He was in The Conjuring 2.
He keep going.
I'm so shocked you haven't seen these movies.
I don't like scary movies, Spencer.
Obviously. He was, oh, there he is, in The A-Team, the movie.
Didn't see it.
Oh, my God. So in The A-Team, he plays...
Mr. T is the one I
he's, Mr. T's not even in that movie.
I know, but I want him to be.
Anyway, so he plays in The A-Team, he plays this CIA agent named Lynch. And the joke is that, like...
He's the linchpin.
The joke is that every time somebody shows up from the CIA to, like, any kind of government operation, their last name is always Lynch. So it's like, everybody's like, I knew a Lynch back in 64. Yeah, another agent named Lynch came through, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But he's like, the biggest jerk in the movie. And honestly, that's kind of jilted me from seeing him any further in any other thing. And I don't even hold a candle to the fact that he played William Travis in the movie The Alamo. So, but I mean, it's just, he has that face. Like, is it just me or does Patrick Wilson have that face?
The punchable face?
Yeah.
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 The one where you're like, I see you on the street. I'm going to keep walking and I'm going to try not to hit you because you're going to say something. And I'm just going to want to shove like week old socks in your face and go.
What?
I don't know.
Why would you...
Because it's a less violent way to, like, be violent, I guess.
Stuff stinky socks into his mouth?
No, into his face.
Into his face.
Okay. That way I can escape. I don't have to deal with that.
All right.
Sock attack.
So, speaking of Patrick Wilson's role in this film, let's talk about some of the acting. This film has a lot of unique roles and appearances in this movie. Obviously, like I said, you have Patrick Wilson who plays the lead male role. You have John Bradley, who plays Casey Hausman.
The only good thing in our lives.
You have Halle Berry in the movie, who I've literally just been calling. Every time I talk about her, I just call her Halle Berry. I don't even remember her name. Jocinda Jo Fowler.
I don't remember her name being Jocinda.
I heard Joe Fowler. Director Joe Fowler.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have these folks in the film as the main folks, the main cast. You have Michael Peña, who plays the... second husband to Patrick Wilson's ex.
Sorry, Tom.
You have a lot of other folks that really just aren't that notable in this movie, unfortunately. And then you get like a 2-minute cameo of a suicidal Donald Sutherland.
In a wheelchair. In a motorized wheelchair where we're like, wait, why?
Was it motorized? I don't remember.
It was motorized.
Because I thought he was wheeling himself out.
No, he did not move his arms that much. Oh. His blanket was secure. He had a flannel blanket across his lap. If there was anything stereotypical about an old person hiding secrets or protecting secrets for the government in a motorized wheelchair, it was him.
Yeah, that was very, like, sad. Because you have this scene where Halle Berry is given, like, highest clearance to go check out this evidence from this, you know, top secret bunker of information. She goes in, and all the while, Donald Sutherland is cleaning something on his desk in a dark office, and he has all the cameras in front of him. He's watching her, and she finally comes in, and she goes over to someone and asks for this file, and all of a sudden, you go back to Donald Sutherland, and he puts down what he's been cleaning, and it's a revolver, and he puts down one bullet, and he puts it on his desk, and you're like, oh my God, what the heck? And she goes through all this evidence or whatever, and he comes out of nowhere, and he explains about some other... exposition of the film. Oh, you gotta, you know, don't ask about this, blah blah blah, which happens to be the linchpin to their whole mission later in the film. And then she's like, well, why aren't you doing anything, whatever. He goes, well, if you're done, I have some business to attend to that's on my desk right now or something. And then he leaves and you're like, oh, okay,
super dark.
Super like dark,
expecting to hear a gunshot in the background
like as she leaves. Yeah.
That was just sad. And the worst 2 minutes of Donald Sutherland in a movie I've seen yet. And I say I've seen because I'm pretty sure there's probably worse. But to what my viewing eyes have seen, that was pretty bad.
Yeah. What was bad for me was pretty much any time a child spoke in this movie.
Oh, my God.
Normally, I like, you know, give like a little space for child actors. But this movie, they found everyone who was at Toys R Us that day.
Oh, like, but Toys R Us.
Well, like, there's one open now.
Okay, yeah, but that's Jersey.
They're trying to come back, but...
That makes a lot of sense. They found them in Jersey.
Well, and not to mention, like, they must have found them in, like, the depressing section. Because, like, the first kid you see, he's looking at videos of how his father got disgraced by NASA.
We had to talk about that whole scene. That was the most ridiculous exposition sum I've seen in a while.
Seriously.
Like there's so much going on, and the movie hops out of that scene real fast, too.
Yeah.
It's just there to be like, okay, this is a kid, this is an ex-wife, they're getting a divorce, he's been disgraced because... something, and also everyone thinks he sucks now, so let's go into the future. It's like, you didn't need this in the movie if you're gonna spend such a like short amount of time here, especially since that kid actor had to do a lot of the talking in that scene.
That kid actor was also in The Boys.
Oh, he was.
Mm-hmm. I checked it. That was the one when you're like kid actors.
What was he in The Boys?
Deshaun. I don't know. I didn't watch The Boys. That's you.
It doesn't sound like it's a very recognizable character.
I'm assuming not because
it's probably the you know who it probably is? It's probably the son of Homelander.
There you go. Okay. I don't know because I didn't watch The Boys after reading the comic books. Huh. But I agree. These children and being a parent, I can say things about children. Yeah. Just kidding.
Yeah, so like I was not impressed with any of the kids. And even some of those teenagers, I was like, yeah, you're not doing it either.
Okay. Man. Charlie Plummer, not related to Christopher Plummer at all. Apparently, he was in a whole bunch of like indie projects or whatever, who plays grown-up Sonny. This man, child, was the most wooden person I have seen to date.
But amazingly matched the child actor.
Exactly.
You did.
And I was just like, why? Why are... No, he doesn't need to have a troubled son that he's got to prove that he's worth something to. Like, they made the best family then. They deserved each other.
I don't even know how to. He was wooden. The exchange non-foreign girl who was obviously American trying to put on an Asian accent was very much. She was a little bit more animated than he was. But she didn't have as much screen time. But let's go back to the kids real quick, because the kids, they probably delivered some of the most depressing lines in the movie.
They're like, straightforward and just blunt, and you're like, "Ow,
Mom, are we gonna die?" It's like, come on, like
someone does not remember what children,
right?
At all.
They're like, Roland, we forgot to put kids in the movie. Ah. Just give adult 4 and adult 2 the roles of kids and then just make it sound like a kid. Like, I feel like that's what happened because it just doesn't really feel like children.
Why aren't you coming with us, Mommy? Are you going to send another rocket to the moon? Like, man, these kids. And then of course, when we sadly, RIP Michael Peña, lose him, his daughter's like, I don't know. He was back there somewhere. I lost him. And I'm like, what?
That daughter.
I don't think
she knew what was going on at all.
I'm telling you, this is the problem with movies nowadays. They don't take lessons from movies of old. Because if there's one thing that any movie taught us, Terminator 2 taught us that you can hand off oxygen masks, give it to the next one, let them take a couple breaths while you hold yours, and then back and forth. That whole left, right could have been left person, right person, and easily could have solved the reason as to why Michael Peña did not have to die. But apparently they had to kill a Mexican. So I'm just,
Well, I feel like the real thing was like Michael Peña saw where this movie was going. And he was like, I need to get out of this movie as fast as possible.
He's like, asphyxiation on a mountaintop. You got it.
He's like,
I'm the Lexus dealer.
Just keep going. And then as the movie pans, buy a Lexus.
Oh my gosh. There was product placement all over the place. And I'm not going to lie, I used Casper Sky. So I was like, hey, Casper Sky.
What?
Casper Sky, which was the thing that kept popping up over all of like their computer screens.
Are you talking about Kaspersky?
Oh, I kept calling it Casper Sky.
That's it's a hard one to say.
Oh, my God.
Just like,
I appreciate that you know it because you're the tech guy.
The fact that... Okay.
Don't throw anything this at me. Don't throw anything at me. Ah!
There's a lemon. Hold on.
No!
Yeah. No.
At least you knew what I was talking about. So yeah,
no, because okay, because luckily I was, my phone is dark enough so that it's not really irritating in theaters. So I started taking notes. Because like there were like it was I forgot to write that down. It was Kaspersky and someone else.
I'm sorry.
Who was like
the spelling is K A S P E R S K Y. How do you say?
I
Kasper
just found my
Sky?
Glasses after a whole time.
They've been around.
And I saw this without.
They've been around since 2007.
I know.
I feel like they're older.
They right.
Oh,
shouldn't.
1997.
There you go.
You're looking on CEO.
Kasper Skies.
Well, I didn't have my glasses.
There's not even an
movie.
S on here. It says Kasper Sky. Kaspersky. It's Russian.
I'm Ukrainian.
Oh my God. Oh, okay.
My heritage is Ukrainian, not Russian.
And yet, here we
and
are.
And Jewish. I'm that, in denial and stubborn. It works.
Not, that's not helping you.
Either way, I kept saying that. I was like, hey, I use those. And then I'm like, wait, this is a lot of product placement for them. And then Lexus with like the Lexuses everywhere.
Yeah. Kaspersky was on a computer screen for something. And I was like, you don't even do that. What are you doing? What?
It was when they, because it looked like the old, one of the older screens and it was right along the top and it had the, not the interference, but when you get kind of the bars and the waves and it slides down the screen, like the older ones. And I'm like, what? That doesn't go there though. Password protection.
Yeah. Product placement. Kasper Sky.
I mean, it's not even product placement because they don't have those products.
Oh my God.
At least in like Kaspersky, like Alexis. Yeah, they have the cars. They have Lexus cars.
You mean Kasper Skies?
I'm okay with that. If we can find a movie about it, that'd be even better. But yeah, they're like, because it's an antivirus program and it's like getting McAfee.
So here's one of my issues with this movie. Halle Berry, who is a phenomenal actress, looks incredible for her age, which I didn't get a chance to look
up. 27 and some change.
She's pretty much she was born in 1966.
No, she wasn't.
50.
Nope. We don't do math. Not like that. Not like this woman. We don't do that.
56. The woman is 56. She looked barely in her 30s.
Yeah.
She looks great.
She looks stunning.
But the fact that even with all that, the writing for her role, it was wrong. It was atrocious.
Okay, so there is a sequence where Halle Berry is trying to get Brian Harper back on board with like NASA and like everything they're doing. And I got lost during their conversation, but she seemed to flip flop like between her positions of like, we need you. And then like he said something offhand and she's like, why are you even here? Then she a second later flips back. It's like, okay, but we really need you to do this. Like, what is your messaging? Like,
pick a lane. Like, come on. Because the way her whole writing, like at every moment that Halle Berry's character got a chance, it tried to take the easy road out. Mm-hmm. Like in every instance. And it was like, okay, like that one. She was like, well, then why are you here? And then it didn't seem like you were going to get a positive outcome of this. And then when something happens with the ship and she's like, okay, that's it. Game over. Everybody go home. And it's like, wait, the world depends on this. Why are you not?
In evacuation. Everybody, we're evacuating now. Like, she didn't even try. And then they're playing at this. I need to know the answers. I should know what's going on. I'm going to help. We got to protect everybody. And it's like, meh. I give up.
And she's like, okay, everybody go home. See you tomorrow. Like, there won't be a tomorrow. The only saving grace to this movie that made it watchable was
Fuzz Aldrin.
Freaking John Bradley as Casey Houseman. I am, and this is not said without any, like, I cannot over-exaggerate how much this is truth. This movie would not have been as amusing if Josh Gad was in the role, because John Bradley is a treasure. Like, I
thank
would.
Thank you, Game of Thrones.
I would gladly. Well, he's been in other things since then.
Yeah, but we pretty much have a start in Game of Thrones. And also, hilariously enough, from last week, he was the manager in Marry Me. But he didn't have enough screen time to counteract that.
So, unbeknownst to you, he was also in Merlin.
He was
also
episode.
In The Brothers Grimsby. He was in two. He was also in. He was on Conan. He was on World of Warcraft. He was in.
He
Game
was
of
a
Thrones.
Voice actor in World of Warcraft.
But he was still in it.
You
keep acting like
nothing about this man.
You literally just learned all this last night.
No, I didn't. Okay. I knew he was from Game of Thrones, and he's a Sam. Sam Tarly. Get it right.
Wow. So John Bradley is probably the only saving grace in this movie, and he is pretty much wonderful and great to watch on screen just about at every opportunity he's on. He's got a lot of great jokes. He's got a lot of great lines. He is the most relatable character in the movie that I think people will not just resonate, but find themselves rooting for from the beginning.
Which is crazy, because if you told me at the beginning of this year, hey, in this one movie, you're going to root for a conspiracy theorist, I'd be like, that doesn't sound right.
No.
But here we are.
What are you doing over there? You were literally wrestling with your mic?
It fell off the table.
Uh-huh.
Keep going. I wasn't trying to cut into Spencer or
you
anything.
You were, because all I heard is...
Not.
She's over here tap dancing with her microphone. He's... You're right. Like, the whole conspiracy theory role, like, I honestly thought from the beginning, I'm like, okay, all right, this guy, I don't know if I'm going to like him. He's one of those kind of crazy nuts, which, oddly enough, there tends to be one of those in just about every Roland Emmerich movie. You look at Independence Day, Randy Quaid was the nut. You look at 2012, Woody Harrelson was the nut. And then you look at this one and John Bradley. I don't remember one being in The Day After Tomorrow, but I could be wrong. Who knows? But the whole idea of his character in this is that he's just somebody who absolutely loves space, but he just can't get a break.
He's too chunky.
And so he does it on the down low, like sneaking into professors' offices and getting information from like South American satellites and so forth. South American. And a lot of his conversations with other characters are just really good. Like the conversation he has when you first meet his mom, who lives in a home, and she has, I guess, the beginning stages of Alzheimer's, or dementia, whatever it may be. And she's like, well, you make them hear you. And you're like, oh, and then she forgets his name and you're like, oh, and it's like, ah, this guy makes such a likable character all the way from the beginning to the end of the movie. I liked his performances.
Well, I think now that you mention it, I feel like maybe the reason for that is because they're the only one. He's the only person who they really give good moments to. Because because
they give good moments to Patrick Wilson's characters, but he doesn't deliver as relatably or
good moments are you talking about?
Like when he's in that white room and he's trying to like, oh, why are you trying to save the earth? Oh,
the download.
My son. I love my son or whatever. Like if that was John Bradley in that role I'm trying to save my mom. You know, then you would be much more like inclined to be like, oh,
yeah, I think it's probably because we've met his son and I don't like him. And so that's probably why.
Yeah. We're like, your son isn't worth saving, man.
And that's is he really worth saving the earth? Like
I understand the other people. And then, oh my goodness, John Bradley is an absolute treasure. 100%. The video he makes after he leaks all the information where he's like, all right, you guys, we're going to be meeting at my secret, at our normal place, usual time. And you're like, oh no, he's not going to give out the information. And then he has on the bottom of his makeshift video, the address and the location. I'm like, oh, you smart. And then he's like, free bagels, thumbs up. I was like, that is so ridiculously adorable.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to hang out. And then him leading the rest of the conspiracy theorists or the mega structuralists.
Who mind you, they are the real like conspiracy theorist nut jobs that you expected. But thankfully, John Bradley is not that.
Yeah, so. Because the one guy, Ziggy, who's sure that the moon is full of produce, who like sits out with his Birkenstocks and socks, is just some
smoking
of them.
Weed in the main hallway.
And you're like, no. But yeah, he is delightful. He's funny. He's sincere. And every beat that he's given while he's on camera is so charming, even when he's like, I can't go to space. I have IBS and I have anxiety. And I'm not going to lie, I was waiting for a poop joke for the rest of the entire movie.
I think the whole audience was waiting for a poop joke. It needed a poop joke.
So many G's, so little time. And there was never, even when he said when they got to the moon and they opened the door and they realized that they can breathe and there's oxygen. And he goes, it smells funny. And we're like, joke.
And no poop joke.
No poop joke.
Speaking of the moon, let's talk about the story for this movie for a second. Now, the idea of this movie, and mind you, we are going to be talking about spoilers, but I doubt anybody here is probably going to have a chance to see the movie because it looks like it's literally on its way out.
It is running out of the theaters. It's not even walking at like a leisurely pace.
Yeah.
If it lasts the rest of the week, I would be surprised.
There's maybe 3 to 4 showings a day now. So it's not getting a lot of attention time. I don't know about you guys, but the theater I was in was probably like five chairs wide. And it was like a tiny thing. So I'm pretty sure the further they push movies towards the back areas where you don't really see a lot of people typically means they're not going to be here for much longer. But we are talking about spoilers. In terms of the story, obviously the story, if you've seen the trailer, starts with this black goo that attacks the ship in defense of, or so, what's his name? Commander? Captain? What is he?
Captain.
Is he a captain?
Yeah, I believe because she's a lieutenant. I don't know. I don't understand that whole ranking system when it comes to NASA because there's a pilot and then there's everybody else.
So astronaut Brian Harper, after Halle Berry gets knocked out, one of their colleagues dies. He is able to land the shuttle manually without any electronics. But when he gets home, he tries to explain what happened. Nobody believes him. He ends up getting disgraced, thrown out of NASA. Halle Berry, who is unconscious, can't really corroborate with his story because she doesn't know. So she stays with NASA. 11 years pass, and then this happens where the moon seems to be shifting orbit. People get scared. John Bradley's character Casey finds out about it because of his secret, you know, escapades to the professor's office. Gets the information, leaks it to the
Twitter. He first tries to tell everybody at NASA, and then nobody's answering or taking any of his calls. Nobody's reaching out to him.
Well, because he's calling NASA's store.
Yeah,
he's calling the souvenir store.
He has multiple restraining orders against him for other people in NASA. So that's kind of sketch. But then also simultaneously, while he's found this out, and he's the first one to find out, NASA has found out as well at this point. And now Assistant Director Fowler, Halle Berry, is like, we need to tell people what's going on. And main director's like, don't tell nobody. Don't tell nobody. Nobody needs to know this is a problem. And that's when you know there's a problem.
Yeah.
So essentially, the information gets leaked out by John. He leaks it to the social media. People get crazy. They end up realizing they need to do something. The actual director himself, he quits after a failed recon mission goes out and they get destroyed by the black goo that comes out of the moon. So Halle Berry goes on the hunt for Brian, who is currently talking with Casey about his findings because Casey tries to tell him first. And then they all go on this big journey of trying to figure out a way to execute a mission going to the moon. Ultimately, to go to the moon to try to use this government top secret device that is a large EMP to just destroy the thing because it seems to be technological in nature. And so that's pretty much the brunt of it. They go to the moon. They're trying to destroy it. Stuff happens. The story itself is not bad. Like, the idea of it. The general idea of it.
The idea of a story.
Like, I mean, if you think about it, we've had this thought in mind for almost 40-50 years with that first line from Alec Guinness in A New Hope where he says, that's no moon. You know, that whole idea ticked off this mindset that what if the moon wasn't really the moon? Like, what if there was something else? This just continues to further that idea. And in the scope of of the respect for science fiction, this is definitely something that can be built upon. The problem is, the only thing they built upon with this was ridiculous CGI, horrible physics, and really bad acting.
Yeah.
Because there are scenes in this movie that don't make sense as a conversation, like you mentioned, Spencer, with the dialogue when they first are talking about Halle Berry and Patrick Wilson's character about how to help and how not to help. And then you get things like the physics where things are happening, but because it's the moon, you should expect it to be a lot more on a grander scale, but it's literally moving feet by feet. There are people that are watching from a car as the space shuttle and the entire ocean, which is probably no more than like 500 yards, is getting sucked up due to gravity.
That made me so angry that they were just like, let's watch the rocket lift off. I'm like, you were just there. You are not far enough away. And then, of course, they're not far enough away. And then they're like screaming to get back in their truck and get going the day. And they were all the kids. So yep. If they died, I wouldn't have been upset.
Nope.
Well, there's lots of things where I was like, survival movie? Could have been. But the first thing is, when the rocket goes off, you ask little Jimmy in the back seat to let you know if it goes off successfully, and you keep driving.
Yep.
The man had a Humvee. He could have just kept going.
Yep.
There's a lot of things that happen in this movie that are just kind of ridiculous in terms of its execution.
It was too long.
The frustrating part about the movie, yes, yeah, is that the fact that it was
just...
This is a
TNT movie that's been on an exploded budget. They was given too much time and lackadaisical support during a pandemic where it's like, do you know what I want to do? Do you know what sounds nice right now? How about we turn this this one sequence into like a 10-minute sequence? Like, do you want to see a helo like crash into an ocean? Like, while simultaneously water's being sucked up into it, we're just going to murder everybody, including the two guys that stayed behind to try to fix things, because that's smart.
Mm-hmm. When you already know that the world is at stake, as a filmmaker, you don't want to kill every person right away. You want to keep some type of mentality for, okay, the hope is based on these people. Now, mind you, if that crew whittles down to the more unique crew that's actually putting themselves in line, if that whittles down to like maybe 5-6 people, that works. This whittled down to 3 people 40 minutes in, and it wasn't even halfway through.
It was 3 people and a guy in a bunker that was way too young to be a 5-star general.
The thing is, though, is that same guy is with Halle Berry, so they could be drinking from the same fountain of youth. Who knows? I don't know. But the overall essence of this story that was executed really was done. There needed, like, every scene needed more, like,
and less simultaneously. Yeah. This was the Chanel problem. You're supposed to, when you're going out, you have to take off one thing. Coco Chanel taught us everything. When you're making a movie, you gotta check, what's one thing you don't need?
Don't look at me. I don't know.
In this movie, like, I feel like they could have simultaneously added half an hour and then cut 45 minutes.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, they chose the wrong things to focus on.
Yeah.
For instance, like, here's something. You could have cut the whole thing with that kid going to jail.
Yep.
Like,
Didn't
even need it. You could have just left him in jail.
Yeah. Also, like, one of the, like, more hilarious parts of that whole sequence was, first off, when they're doing the whole, like, car chase, and like there's like helicopters there. They got down on the ground so fast to like have zoom in face looks of what was happening with those kids.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't think you're even allowed to show that part, but nope, whatever. And then when they're at the trial, I noticed that like the judge's name tag slid out of the little holder thing and then slid back in between cuts.
This movie had more inconsistencies like that, mm-hmm, because there's that, and then there's the illustrious Casey is Jesus moment where Casey is talking with Brian in a cafe that's attached to the hotel, and he's pouring himself what obviously looks like a pot of coffee, and he's pouring it into a cup, and then he stops pouring and he turns around, and all of a sudden that pot is clear.
Like, I thought it was tea. I was like, so you saw it too?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, maybe he's making tea. And then when he put it back, it was still water. And I'm like, but there's no tea bag hanging out of there. And he's pouring sugar into it like normal. And I'm like, what?
Don't you drink your water with sugar?
Unless I was a fly. That's what's forgetting.
I forgot in this cup. It's just, there's water, but no sugar.
Oh my goodness.
And it's like, this is a consistency throughout the whole movie. Like, you have all these little things that are like, okay, that doesn't make sense. Okay.
I have another one that made me laugh. So when, of course, because the moon has changed orbit again, and we're getting the floods in Los Angeles, poor John Bradley, he's like downstairs and he gets swept off his feet by the initial tidal wave.
Because he didn't run up the stairs. I don't know.
Yeah, but the best part was that he could have stood up. There were so many.
The water was only like one or two steps deep.
And he could have stood up. And then my favorite part is because certified lifeguard, when Brian jumps in to save him and he's carrying, like he's trying to pull him out and carry, it was like a half-hearted attempt. But I'm like, both of you could have stood up.
I literally got Robin Hood Men in Tights vibes.
I love Men in Tights.
Yeah, that movie's good. Not unlike this movie. But another thing about that one scene was like there was a flash of like that stoner guy like reaching out his hand, but when you pull out to see where he is, he's up the staircase way too far.
He's like, bye.
Remember, he's high. he's like, I'm right there with you guys, and he's already on the third floor.
Fun thing about that was a practical effect. So I read an article this morning about John Bradley doing an interview, and he was like thinking, oh, you know, green screens. I've been doing green screens forever with Game of Thrones. So they'll tell you, okay, you're going to imagine an army of 5,000. That's what's on the green screen. React accordingly. He goes, the green screen scenes that we used versus the practical effects were completely different. He goes, first thing on the green screen when we're like sitting in the shuttle, he goes, imagine the inside of the moon. He's like, I don't know what that was. And I'm like, yes, good job. And then he goes, but when they did the practical effect of the water, when everything's kind of like he's supposed to stand up, he said it was the longest, hardest day he's ever done. He kept getting hit by gallons and gallons of nasty water and he couldn't stand up. And so I'm like, okay, that makes more sense why you couldn't get up. But buddy, that's so gnarly.
That's rough.
Well, and so speaking of inconsistencies, or not inconsistencies, but the probably the most consistent thing throughout this movie is that everybody is freaking divorced.
Halle Berry went to space on her honeymoon. You knew that was going to
end. And then
11
years later, she's been divorced. Patrick Wilson was married before he went to space. 11 years later, they're divorced. Like,
she went for Michael Pena. I'm not going to be mad at that woman for that.
Yeah. I don't even know what that means, but okay.
Of the two evils, punch a face, Michael Pena. Who do we choose?
You always choose Michael Pena.
You also always choose Michael Pena. He has a Lexus dealership, for crying out loud. And a sketchy location in Aspen that you might be able to go to with a crazy Karen and a shotgun.
But the entire thing that goes through this entire movie that is consistent is everybody constantly talking about their divorce or their ex or, you know, all those aspects of it, or their ex's husbands or the relationship or the strain or whatever. It's like, one thing that I've learned, I will never want to work for NASA, because apparently if you work for NASA, you get divorced, because that's what happened to these people. They're all divorced and they talk about it constantly throughout this movie. Like, even in space, they're talking about it.
There was weird. So that's the other thing we need to talk about. Him referring to Halle Berry as his work wife. I understand the concept, but also at that point, she is married. She's just fresh on the carriage, married. And he's like, yeah, she's my work wife. And the guy that they lose at the very, very beginning, that's like the rookie, he's like, I don't think is that okay for you to say? And I'm like, that young man. And they kill him. And I'm like, he had this
he asked the wrong questions.
But there
that's
was like creepy sexual tension later on, like after he tries to get her, or she tries to recruit him to come back to help with everything. They're fighting like an old married couple. And then when they're in space and they're about to die, you're like, is he going to try to like mack on her or something? Like what's going on? I don't get it. I just don't. Also, I don't like that guy. I just don't.
This story was more focused on how to survive being divorced and an astronaut. because this that was the only thing that really held that consistency throughout the whole movie, that like, okay, this is what we're talking about. This is what's on. Because even the space physics goes all over the place. They're like, oh, Casey, you're a genius. Do whatever. And then they bring him on the ship and they're like, Casey, what's this? And it's like, come on. You're going to do my dude dirty like that. And you have these instances of like the sun is just, oh, you know, oh, whatever, Dad. You were never there. This is that, whatever. And then at the end, he's like, oh, my God, I'm so glad you're back, Dad. And it's like, what changed? Like, okay, your dad did something great, but he's still your dad.
He might get money. That's what changed.
Life insurance policy.
Here's the thing, though. His stepdad was the one who gave him a car for free.
He also gave him an apartment. He did a whole bunch of other things where I'm like, Michael Pena coming in strong, man.
One dad can give me money and cars and an apartment. The other one can bring me back a moon rock.
moon rock from the fake moon surface.
Exactly. And mind you, that was probably the most potential facet of this entire story, and it felt a little dull. So we get to the point where we realize that the inside of the moon is actually a mega structure.
Yay for Casey.
And woo! You come to find out that it was created by our ancestors from billions of years ago, because apparently our race was once this thriving, very technologically advanced race who created these things that produced food and they like crops and all this kind of stuff. And then
apparently, like around here, the Matrix movies inserted themselves
simultaneously with Interstellar
while breaking out of their Amazon Alexas.
That was the other thing that I noticed. It looked, so it was supposed to be an Amazon Alexa. I'm glad she's out of here. But the one that when they go back and they're showing you your ancestors and blah, blah, blah. And the little girl has a triangle, like little Alexa on the table. And I swear to you, I was like, oh. It's a Sith holocron. It's Star Wars. It's Star Wars right here.
Well, it does.
Their houses look like Elysium.
So it is a story about that took place in a galaxy long time. You know, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. So, hey, who knows? Making connections. But this aspect of it could have become something bigger, but it really kind of just fell flat to the whole like, oh, you know, nothing else is existing. We got two opposing AIs, and this AI wants to survive. This AI wants to kill. So the AI that wants you to live is going to give you all the information through this mental download.
The operating system. I just called one the operating system and one Alexa, to be very honest. That's how I kept them clean. And I was like, ooh. And then also I had these flashes to like, Titan AE was better and shorter.
Okay.
I just like Titan AE better. We're dealing with like an arc and it's our moon, and like it was convoluted, and it was trying to say so many things and show you so many things, and all I was thinking was, why are we doing this? Does your brain have the capacity to download billions of years of data from our ancestors? Truly, are you capable of that?
Well, I thought that he was literally just saying what we were saying. Like, it was just that. That's it. And, like, some vague information.
So they're like, I'm going to teach you how to fly this a little better. And then you're going to zoop, zoop out and be like, hey, scary Matrix monsters, follow me.
So, hey, we upgraded your ship with our 3D printer. So
it was a 3D printer, though, wasn't it? It's like, ooh, it's so shiny and it's so new.
And then we get to the end of the film. So you think Patrick Wilson is the one who's going to be the self-sacrificing white savior of this movie. He's like, oh, I have all the information. This is what I'm going to do. And then he kind of sneaks them into one of the little tubes that goes to the surface to essentially like lower the monster back in so he can take the device and then go after the machine. And we get this awesome, amazing scene where Casey decides that he's going to be the one to go and sacrifice himself.
He's our Spock.
Honestly, best scene of the whole movie. And it's about somebody dying, but still best scene of the whole movie. Where Casey's like, you know, looking on my mom, and you know, and you know, I don't want to be a failure. And it's like, oh my God, how much more are they making this guy relatable? I will go sacrifice myself to a moon monster if it means that I won't be a failure. Everybody has the same mindset. Patrick Wilson, Halle Berry, they can go do whatever they want in space. But Casey, we need to preserve these people, these types of people.
Well, and he was smart about it because he closed the door and he goes, your brain. And he tells me, he's like, your brain is the key to the moon. You have the information. And I'm just like, don't do it, man. Like I'll you take know the what hit. You've seen. Be come like, on.
As a representative of Earth, I'll take the hit. Send Patrick Wilson. It's fine. Like, I would take Casey every day, all day. Like, let Patrick Wilson go kill himself. It's okay.
In the movie. In the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, simultaneously, while all this is happening, by the way, of course, because the Department of Defense cannot be trusted, they're in a silo in Colorado, down at the bottom, trying to launch nukes because they're like, if we blow up the moon, it'll be even better.
We're Americans.
Yeah. Also, other inconsistency. So they give Jimmy, Halle Berry's son and ridiculous five-star commander, a satellite phone that looks like a walkie-talkie. Most of them do. That's okay. So we're driving, but they've specifically pointed out that the satellites that are in orbit have been knocked out of orbit, and this child...
They've been destroyed, essentially.
Yes. Kaboom. And this child keeps calling dad and not only getting through, but... somehow he can hear him clearly, and he's going to give him access to get into the top secret military base, into the silos, so that they will be preserved. Also, how long is the drive from like outside of Los Angeles to Aspen, Colorado? Because they've turned it into like a three or four hour thing.
Yeah, it's real close actually, especially when gravity is low.
Oh yeah, they hit a quick bump and they just over the mountains.
And all those cars that were on the road, it's
fine. Oh yeah, the road wasn't evacuating or anything, you know,
and
roads were easy and close. They could have taken the scenic route.
And it wasn't like when you get held up at gunpoint, the first thing, when someone stops you on the road, if they do not know, even if they have children, technically, in a survival movie, you're in a Humvee, one, you don't stop. Two, you're in a Humvee. You could literally have pushed that car out of the way and kept on trucking.
Yeah.
And if that person got hurt, oh well.
Yep, their fault. I usually go into like highlights or issues, but I think we've listed pretty much everything that is highlighted or issued.
We have not.
Okay.
We have not actually talked about the science of this movie.
We don't want to talk about the science of this movie.
It is so wild. I can understand why no one wants to talk about it, because where would you even start? There's
exactly.
way too many things wrong. And also, one of the YouTube channels I follow, they randomly put out... a video like 2 weeks ago, what would happen if the moon suddenly crashed into Earth? And so I was like, oh, let me check this out. Mm-hmm. This might shed some light onto moonfall. And they were like, yeah, like if it was that sudden, no one is surviving that. That's it's game over. It doesn't matter if it's like it's just making a straight shot for us. Not good.
Yeah.
But like the thing is with this movie is that like things are not consistent with how the moon is affecting the Earth
ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because like there's like the whole, like the scene where the rocket is lifting off into the air, mm-hmm. and it's also pulling the ocean. Like I was like, how is that chopper even doing that? Because it should have pulled out the air first since that's above. And so what are you using for lift there?
Magic.
Yeah.
I've got my magic.
Pixie dust.
Faith, trust, pixie dust. That's how we do.
And then also the fact that this superstructure is also containing a white dwarf star, which has what I looked up to be 100,000 times Earth's surface gravity.
Vroom.
Like the movie doesn't explain enough of like, oh no, we're fine because of this. Because we should be dead,
yes.
like, or be flying towards the moon. Or it should be, like, reconfiguring the whole solar system to be, like, everyone's orbiting around these two stars now.
Yeah. It's working off of Futurama logistics without Futurama science.
Without Futurama fun.
That, too.
Man, because you know what this movie can use? Bender.
Bender, yeah. That's what it needed. Just another robot to, you know, hey, I'm Bender. You know, yeah, that would have been like the only thing I thought about when that towards the tail end, when the moon was so close to the Earth that you could see like the surface of it. I literally thought of that episode when Mars gets that close to Earth and Fry's trying to save Leela and his arm pops off and then her arm pops off. And it's that's literally what I thought when I saw that. I'm like, oh, this is like an episode of Futurama.
Yeah, a really bad episode of Futurama. Really didn't bother to think about anything that came before or after.
Well, then, yeah. And then for me, when they were wearing, because of course the moon's getting closer and everybody's about to die and asphyxiate, yeah. The little, so the parents have the proper like sealed masks that they have the oxygen tanks. I'm like, okay, we don't have to worry about your eyeballs exploding or anything else, even though you're putting oxygen into your body. The little girl has a, like an asthma, a little tiny squeaky plastic asthma mask. And she's like walking and like, Dad, my air's getting low. And I'm like, first off, girl, you've got the tiniest tube. And unless you are talking the entire way to your dad, oh, you probably should have been able to like move it. Move your legs. And the tree. There's tree. There is a scene where, of course, Sonny, because what else are you going to name your son? With an O. Sonny has gone back out into the snow to go find Michael Pena, who is missing since the daughter showed up and's like, I don't know where my dad is.
In the midst of the climax of the film.
Yes. So he's going out. And of course, things are exploding. He gets thrown from the cave. And of course, our exchange student slash nanny slash I don't know, girl. Your Mandarin was nice. runs out after him. Of course, they both don't wear their oxygen tanks or their masks. They just ditch him and run. And when she finds him, he is under, no joke, the width of like a sequoia. And he's laying there. And not only is he talking, he's like, oh, it's so heavy. I can't.
No, no, no. His first thing was, oh, you shouldn't have come here. You should have gone back. And it's like, you're under a tree. You need help. You should be dead. Right? Yeah.
Because the ground around him, there was no impact marks or anything. And she's like, oh, the moon's coming back. We're gonna have the moon lift this. It's going to help us. And she lifts it. And he comes out. There's no impression. There's no nothing. He's fully able-bodied. And I'm like, you son of a son of a sonny. Like, no. Well, I need to teach my children if they get like hit by a tree, a big tree, they're dead.
That's a lesson for the children, apparently.
Okay, another thing I want to talk about that's in this whole area of stuff. The reason they even needed those face masks was because they got a warning that warned of atmospheric dispersal. That means no atmosphere. You don't have any air pressure. What? You're dead.
You did. Your body goes... And no, we have all that time to not only go to the fire station, break in, find the oxygen tanks.
And then meet up with the worst burglars ever again.
When there was extra oxygen tanks still in the station and load everything into your Lexus and drive slightly up the hill, but not all the way up into the tunnel. Like, come, you could have taken the ambulance or the fire truck. The fire truck would have been really funny. The ambulance, all retired, like all wheel drive. Let's go. Let's do this. But No, Spencer.
So this brings me to my roundtable question for today.
Oh, Lord.
And the idea that Roland Emmerich is going to make a trilogy out of this begs me to ask the question. So since the intention is there is going to be a trilogy, I want you guys to pitch me your idea for the sequel of this movie.
Okay, so they go back to the moon, and now they're dealing with Moon OS slash not Josh Gad. And so like they're like, okay, we have to like defend the planet from the massive alien thing. But then like somehow they figure out, because Moon OS is like, oh, it sent a transmission in the at the end of the last movie. And so now someone's nearby is on their way. And so the second movie is dealing with like the second one. They're fending it off with other nonsense. And so like, you know, like Earth is saved, but like, oh, the massive one is coming for the third one. But then like they find, oh, hey, this moon's got like Voltron, so let's figure out how to form the Voltron.
We're getting the Power Rangers in space sequence from the movie.
And so like they have to like figure out how to form Voltron in movie 3, and then like, you know, they slash it with a sword at the end, and then everyone's saved,
and
they
it turns around as it explodes in a fireball in space behind it.
Yeah.
What about you, Ames?
So knowing also that they filmed that ending that they didn't like, the original ending, and they filmed that ending that we saw in the theater 9 months later, just makes it so much better.
Is a different ending this month?
So the when they first meet up with their families and they're all hugging everybody, that was the original ending.
Oh. But they didn't like it.
They didn't like it. So they called John Bradley 9 months later and said, hey, can you come up to Montreal? We need to film this ending. And so he filmed the ending that's there now. Because apparently hugging your family never means a sequel. That sounded really
It did neat. For Independence Day, but okay.
Yeah. So we open on two suns. couldn't help it. Okay. So we open on now newly elected President Halle Berry, who has not only, after her tenure of leading NASA and helping send everyone to the moon to start living on the moon, we find out that we've been split into the haves and the have-nots, and the rich people live on the moon, only to find out that, of course, as Spencer said, a signal went out and the other swarms are coming. But this time, they're taking over what's on the planet first. So they're invading our Alexas. They're going to pull a her. They're going to try to befriend the have-nots to make an uprising to attack the moon. Kind of like Elysium.
I was just going to say, this sounds like Elysium. Yeah, this is like, all you need to say is, you know, yeah.
We're going to get Matt Damon.
Yeah, Matt Damon shows up in an exoskeleton. And
well, then, and then the worst thing that could happen, of course, is the cliffhanger for the second one is our beloved Casey, who has now become part of the operating system of the moon, has been integrated with the crazy AI, and he's planning to kill Halle Berry.
Okay. Okay. So part Elysium, part nut story. Okay.
Yeah. Got it. Part nut story. What do you got? Because this is either way we shake the stick, and that was only the part two. I didn't even go to the third one.
No, thankfully. Matrix. Thank God. Thank God. I'm glad you didn't go to this.
We have to jack into Moon OS and get him out of there.
We have to save Casey. We know somewhere in there he's still good. Show him a picture of Fuzz Aldrin. Show him a picture of Fuzz Aldrin.
We were able to repurpose the nanites to make him a nanite body.
Okay. I like that, though. So I'm kind of on the same wavelength as Spencer. Mm-hmm. I feel like in the second one, yes, I feel like Halle Berry is going to be in some commanding role. She's going to be whatever, but I feel like Patrick Wilson is still going to be a disgraced pilot because they're going to want him to train everybody, and he's just going to have too much PTSD and stuff like that he's not going to be able to do it.
He's going
to
Randy Quaid this?
Not so bad. And then I feel like
he's going to Dennis Quaid it.
They're working towards an effort to unify the Earth with the moon and create that inhabitable space working with that AI and Casey, which they now know Casey's alive as part of the integrated system. But the thing that has been sleeping for far too long inside the sun becomes awake.
That's brilliant.
And a massive solar flare due to like construction on the moon causes a hole to occur in the sun. And the beast that is within the sun, which is a much larger and more aggressive form of what was in the moon, comes out and starts attacking everybody. And this is like a planet-sized, you know, sentient being. And so they have to join forces with the technology inside the moon, which the AI knows how to recreate all those ships, to pretty much create a star battle against that thing in there. And when we're getting to that, we get to the point to where obviously Patrick Wilson is going to do what Patrick Wilson does best, come back when he's needed, and shows up, does his cocky thing. But at that point, we're going to come to find out that his ship gets overtaken and he gets engaged into the AI inside the sun. And
Halle Berry has to choose.
And he's essentially, they're taking all of his military knowledge to create a better fighting force that holds within, which is an actual, like you were saying, like a mech inside the sun that is using all the technology to create war on the Earth and Moon.
I like the sun idea.
That's so. Actually pretty cool. The sun is just basically a giant dragon, mech dragon egg, and it's dooming us.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
They could also go the route of like a chase movie and being like, we know they're coming, we're out of here, and then everyone just gets to the moon.
Then it definitely then it becomes a prequel to Titan AE.
Either way, I'm winning.
So let's talk about wrapping this thing up, and let's go ahead and go around the table and see how this film does it pass or fail, and how many monocles. And I kind of have an idea of how this is going to go, but I want to go ahead and start with Amy. Go ahead. Does the film pass or fail?
So, does it have a beginning, middle, and an end, and is it a story that actually somewhat makes sense? Yes. So, on the technicality, it does pass on that regard. As a movie. As a movie. I still want to see Sharknado. But
what?
This...
What is...
I'm sorry. I'm thinking of end of the world things, and I'm like, Sharknado is a possibility, and it's closer to home.
And yet she's never seen it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We'll have to change that.
Yeah. Exactly.
I know what we're doing in May.
It's anime.
Okay.
So as regard to this film, John Bradley is an absolute treasure. If the only thing that you decide to do is find a compilation online where they've cut out all the other parts of the movie and it's just him, you will actively enjoy this, be slightly confused, but more or less understand that he's a treasure and a gem and deserves a whole bunch of accolades. And other than that, don't go see this movie if you have to spend money. This is a TNT movie that was over budget, overwrought, and no. Just no. I'm giving it one monocle, but it's for John Bradley. That is the one thing. And the cat. Okay, 1.5. The cat and John Bradley. That's it. And the cat doesn't even have a lot of screen time.
What about? He did have that photo of the cat.
On the phone.
On the phone.
And then he shows up at the end of the movie. And then he shows up in like when he pees on the paper.
So you're giving one for John Bradley, half for him. What about half for his mom?
Her wig was bad.
Okay. All right, Spencer.
It was a bad wig. She's a lovely creature, but it's a bad
wig. I was like
wig.
Looking at her hair. I was like, something's off about
Somebody
all
Somebody did
of
not
this.
Pull down that wig, bro.
So, no, this movie does not. like, does it fit the shape of a movie? Yeah. But, like, it's too long.
Yeah.
This could have been, like, you know... afternoon like school special size.
It's like a Fox Saturday afternoon
yeah,
movie.
like
TNT has done it a couple of times.
Like I really feel like we could have cut like a good 40 minutes out of this movie and then maybe even add a little bit in where it needed to be and then replaced all the child actors and then gave Michael Peña a raise or something.
Yes.
Seriously. Instead of killing him off without air.
Yeah, so for me, I'm going to give this movie a one, and it's, yeah, just for Dr. Houseman, who's not a doctor, but he calls himself doctor because
he's my doctor,
better.
So I'm just saying.
Okay.
Let's see him as the next Doctor Who. So in terms
not
of, does it from pass or fail, I have to agree with Spencer. It fails as a movie. It's non-consistent. The movie's physics, the logic, the science, even the practical gags that are happening, they don't remain consistent throughout this film. There is lacking on all ends, and I feel like this movie could have been exactly like Spencer said, about a half hour to 45 minutes shorter. In terms of monocles, I am also going to give this a one. I feel like John Bradley is the star of this movie. I don't care what Patrick Wilson says, Halle Berry, anybody else, I don't care. No one else outshined anybody like how John Bradley outshined everybody in this movie. Mm-hmm. Even the moon. He outshined the moon. So, yeah. But that's our take on the film. Thanks for listening in. Again, if you want to check us out, let us know your thoughts on this movie and other movies on our website or on our social media pages. Sorry, facebook.com/filmlostverse and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlostv101. Also, you can check us out on any streaming platform, Amy.
Yes.
Where anywhere you listen to podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Player FM, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn. Check us out. Tune in to wherever we are there. Also, you can find us on our website at filmlostverse.com. We got over 300 episodes. You can check them all out at your leisure. go ahead, head on over there and listen through. Ames, where can people find Jane on Scene?
The only place that it ever lives on occasion, which is going to be at Jane on Scene on Instagram. Sorry, my brain went to my original handles for my actual thing if you're trying to find me, and that's on a different time, space, and plane of existence.
That's right. And you can find Spencer's Big Score and all his segments on our website, as are on our Instagram page as well, at Philosophy 101. We'll be starting to put those up starting this week, so head on over. By Friday, you should start seeing some of his segments. He's only got two, but they're growing.
Yep.
So, but yeah, this was a great show. And mind you, thank you, Raphael.
Yeah.
Thank you, Raphael, for recommending the movie. If you guys have other recommendations, let us know.
Yeah, because this one was actually up my alley. I didn't like it, but I also liked it, if you know what I mean.
That's the best way to say this movie. I liked it, but I didn't like it. So
that's why it's a 1 and a 1.5.
So, but that's about it from all of us here. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm intern Amy.
Class dismissed.